Kennerson, Mr. Tassif.
Good afternoon. George Tassif from Peoria, Illinois, on behalf of Archie Kennerson. Mr. Kennerson filed a motion to suppress in this case, challenging both the initial stop of the vehicle in which he was a passenger, as well as the subsequent frisk of his person. The stop of the vehicle itself is a rather unusual situation involving an innovative, I would submit, interpretation of 11-804, the Illinois Motor Vehicle Code. Be that as it may, our primary focus is upon the subsequent frisk of Mr. Kennerson, who was ordered from the vehicle, secured against the car, and subject to a Terry frisk.
Can you identify any case in which a court has held that although there is reasonable suspicion that a person is involved in an illegal drug transaction, the officers nevertheless lacked an objectively reasonable belief that the person possessed a weapon?
We argue in Cibron versus New York in our brief, where the U.S. Supreme Court addressed a situation where police had a man in Cibron under surveillance for a good 8 hours and observed him talking to, conversing, and meeting with people that the police knew to be drug addicts. So when they confront Cibron later in the evening at a restaurant, they tell him, you know what we're here for, at which time Cibron went to his pocket. The officer then inserted his hand in the pocket and removed heroin. The Supreme Court in the Cibron case said that before the police can even lay a hand on a suspect for whom they reasonably suspect is involved in criminal behavior, that there must be specific and articulable grounds for believing that the individual is armed and dangerous. The government is arguing that certain cases, the government counsel cites Professor Lefebvre's treatise, that some courts, and there is language from some of these decisions from this court, that in a drug investigation, because guns are oftentimes affiliated with or utilized in drug dealing activity, that element, that further specific articulable ground, that he's armed and dangerous, is assumed based on the nature of the investigation.
Reasonable. What's wrong with that?
Well, if indeed that is the direction in which the law is heading, or courts have held, then that specific portion of the Supreme Court's consistent rationale for a Terry frisk, that there be specific articulable grounds.
Well, the specific articulable ground is that these are druggies.
Well,
dealers, and you know, worried that they may be armed.
Well, just as in Cibron, the police in this case observed individuals outside a public housing unit, a complex, if you will, at 11:30 at night, where the vehicle's headlamps, the vehicle was parked perpendicular to the building itself, so the stage, if you will, was lit up as a Broadway stage. And these individuals are observed outside this particular unit conversing and talking. And although the officer suspects there was an exchange, he never saw it. Same situation in Cibron, where the Supreme Court noted that the police in Cibron were not privy to the conversations, nor did they ever observe any transfer or exchange take place. And that is why I respectfully submit that Cibron is Supreme Court authority in a drug case, where the court emphatically states that before a police officer can even as much as lay a hand on a suspect in a Terry frisk, that there have to be specific articulable grounds, not just because of the nature of the investigation, but facts made known to the officer in the context of that particular stop and frisk.
But isn't there more here? The officer saw him moving his shoulders in the back of the car, which could be consistent with concealing something in the car or on himself. And then the driver lies, about what Kennerson is doing in her car. She saw a poor man who was cold, even though she'd never met him. he wanted
going for beer,
and so she says, well, get in my car and I'll drive you for the beer. I mean, you know, they knew that he hadn't entered the car under those circumstances, so that alone would raise real suspicions, would they not?
Well, the furtive movement has become a term of art that we see in many of these decisions as well. And in this case, the officer's testimony was he observed furtive movement of the suspect's shoulders,
right,
which immediately ceased upon his illuminating with his squad light. The furtive movement from the shoulder, no elaboration whatsoever that meant. Again, that use of that terminology, I respectfully submit, should not be the key to allowing the Terry frisk, because ipso facto, there must be an individual armed and dangerous. Simple, nondescript furtive movement, I respectfully submit, is not sufficient. So for these reasons, we ask that the court reverse and remand.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Tassif. Ms. Mullen again.
May it please the court, Linda Mullen on behalf of the United States. I will also jump directly to the frisk here, since that seems to be the primary part of the stop that we need to look at. It is our position that when police officers are investigating particular types of crime, that the right to frisk automatically flows. We believe that's the lesson in Terry. In Terry, the officers were...
The Cibron case that Mr. Tassif emphasizes, you didn't mention it in your brief, I don't think.
I didn't, and I don't recall, Judge Posner, in that case, whether or not the court found reasonable suspicion of drug activity before moving to the second part, which is that you have to, you know, have this fear for your safety. So I can't speak to whether that was found in that particular case. We do believe, though, that the lesson in Terry is that when you are investigating particular types of crime, that right to frisk automatically flows. In Terry, it was a suspected daytime robbery. Those officers in Terry had no particularized information about a weapon on those suspects. There was no outline of a gun. There was no tip about these particular people. All those officers knew was that they suspected that these individuals were casing buildings for a daytime robbery. And in that case, the Supreme Court made clear that it is because of the nature of the offense and not some additional information that those officers were allowed to frisk and Terry. This court then reached a similar conclusion, or the same conclusion on similar facts, I should say, in the Barnett case, which was a government appeal dealing with a suspected nighttime burglary. And in that case as well, the officers had no additional information about the particular suspect being armed. They encountered him in a parking lot outside of a closed restaurant late at night. His story was a little fishy. This court held in Barnett that, in fact, overruled the district court on this point. It was a government appeal. Found in Barnett that the fact that the officers were investigating this burglary gave right to the automatic right to frisk. Given that, then the next logical step, we believe, is to look to see, well, what is the nature of this offense? Is it similar? Would the reasoning be similar as we found in Terry and Barnett? And we would submit yes, because this court has said repeatedly, it's very well settled that drugs and guns go together, that it is reasonable for an officer to presume that a suspect is carrying a weapon when involved in drug trafficking. So we think that that's the next logical step. It's certainly a step that many of the other circuits have already taken, that when you are investigating a suspected drug transaction, the automatic right to frisk is there. Again, we do believe there's more in this case. The original tip that came in said that the folks at this apartment were not only dealing in drugs but had weapons, were known to have weapons. It's a high crime area. It's Century Woods, known for drugs and weapons. There is the furtive movement in the car as they're pulling up. There's this fishy story that they hear. So we have all kinds of other information here as well. But we would submit that even without that information, the officers here had the automatic right to frisk. And so the actions that they took during the course of this traffic stop were reasonable.
I'm surprised you don't cite or mention, or maybe haven't read, the cases that your opponent relies on.
Well, I have read
Cibron.
I haven't read it in a while, and I can't recall again whether or not the court first found in that case that there was reasonable suspicion of drug activity before finding the issue about the pat down. Again, we do know that the Supreme Court has found that there is that automatic right to frisk, as has this court and many of the other circuits.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Mullins. So, Mr. Tassif, your time expired, but if you have something further, we'll listen to you. Okay, and you were appointed, were you not? Federal defender, I mean, yes. Well, we thank the defenders, as usual, for your efforts on behalf of the client. And court will be in.